Yeah, I recognize as we've gone on through Lent, we've had these different types of questions, and some of them have a nuance of difference from maybe a previous week we've talked. Today's no different. It's labeled the diagnostic question. The diagnostic question is meant to pry information out, to bring it to light. And you may experience this if you go to a doctor and say, I just don't feel good. Okay, well, what have you started doing? What have you stopped doing? Have you started eating something different? Did you change your detergent? There's all kinds of diagnostic questions that kind of dig in. And since Jesus knows the answers already, these questions are really meant to bring to the front of our minds the reasons that are hidden sometimes deep in our soul, why we do certain things, why we don't believe things we should believe, why we just make some really bad decisions sometimes. So tonight is no different. Tonight we have three little examples of Jesus and his diagnostic question among different people and at different times. There's many. I think Julie put some of them on the front of the bulletin. Things is Jesus asking, why do you strike me? Or why don't you believe me? I'm telling you the truth. These diagnostic questions are not meant for Jesus to get an answer. They're really meant to bring these to light. A lot of these diagnostic questions, at least the ones I've researched, seem to all revolve around our fears, things we have hidden deep in our recesses. And these questions, as we think about the answer, tend to bring those fears right to the forefront. The first one I found was the fear of the uncontrollable. How many here fear not being in control? Be honest. I love being in control. I like knowing where everything's going to go, how everything's going to be planned, and when things deviate from that course, what happens, kids? Dad gets upset. It's got to go this. This is how it's planned. When we go on vacation, I know the exact path. I know where we should be at what time. And when something happens, like the brakes giving out, a tire, all in the same vacation, a tire blowing, it changes. I'm not in control anymore. So the example I found tonight, which I thought was really interesting, comes from Matthew. Jesus got into the boat and his disciples followed him. And without warning, a furious storm came up on the lake and the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, Lord, save us! We're going to drown! And he replied, you of little faith, why are you so afraid? Then he got up and he rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. And the men were amazed and asked, what kind of a man is this? Even the winds and waves obey him. Why are you so afraid? Why do we have to be in control all the time? Isn't it enough to know that the Lord is in control? Should be. We let things like flat tires, lost brakes, I don't want to say ruin your vacation, that's certainly not the case, but it puts a damper on things. It changes your plans. And for a control freak, that means you have to replan everything. Oh no, I got to recalculate. We like being in control. And you know what? That little English person that sits on your dashboard and tells you, turn right here. That's just really taking it to a really bad level because we rely on the GPSs. Kids, do you even know how to use a map? I'm just curious. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Do you know how to use a map? Just a real map. You lay down flat and you unfold it. No. Yeah. None. You know how to use a map. Of course. We got people here. Anyone over the age of 30 probably knows how to use a map. When the batteries go out and the lady says, turn right here. It's going to be a day of reckoning. It really will. But Jesus has everything under control. The book of Hebrews, from the second chapter, says, He put everything in subjection to him. God put everything in Jesus' control. We have nothing we should worry about. Oh no, the waves are going to take us down. Was Jesus worried? He was sleeping. What'd you wake me up for? The waves, look. Stop. There, can I go back to bed? It's that easy. And we let these things worry about us. Worry is a fear that drives us almost to the points of not being able to cope with life. Anxiety creeps up on us. I have ran across this interesting story. Most of you probably don't remember Nikita Khrushchev. Maybe you do. But Nikita Khrushchev, he was premier of the Soviet Union. He denounced many of the policies and atrocities of Joseph Stalin. And once, as he censored Stalin in a public meeting, Khrushchev was interrupted by a shout from a heckler in the audience. Okay, let's lay the scene out here. This is Russia. Mother Russia. All right? Big, bad Mother Russia. They don't call it the Russian bear for nothing. Everyone's around. If you did something bad in Russia when the Soviet Union was at its height, you weren't heard from again. You were gone. You disappeared quietly in the night. So Khrushchev's up talking about denouncing what Stalin did, and a heckler from the audience says, "You were one of Stalin's colleagues. Why didn't you stop him?" And Khrushchev immediately said, "Who said that?" He looked around and everyone was dead silent. And Khrushchev said, "Now you know why." This man was in fear for his life. I went to Bulgaria. Bulgaria was under the communist rule. I went there after, it would have been probably about 4 or 5 years after communist rule in Bulgaria. 12 o'clock at night. Let's go down to, everything's a discotheque over there. If it plays music, they call it a discotheque. But it wasn't a discotheque. I've never in my life been to a discotheque. Let's go to the discotheque. We'll go down, we'll sit around, we'll talk, we'll have a good time, and we'll come back. So it's 2 o'clock in the morning, time to come back. I said, "I don't feel safe walking these streets." It's like, "No worries." It's like, "No, I'm serious. I'm in a foreign country. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't want someone to jump out or rob me." Everyone here still knows of Mother Russia. Nothing will happen to you. If something happened when Russia was here, you were never heard from again. You are very safe. And we did. We walked home and no one had any problems. What Khrushchev was doing was putting that man on the spot, whoever yelled from the crowd, and he didn't have the gall to say, "It was me. I'm the one that yelled that. Why didn't you stand up for what was right?" He cowered in fear. And Khrushchev said, "Now you know why I didn't say anything." Fear just strangles us. It's got a grip around us, causes us to not be able to even get out of bed at some point. But Jesus has everything under control. So when we rely on him, when we go to him in prayer, when we ask him to help us out, he's there for us. It's not always the answer we want, but it certainly can alleviate our anxiety and our fears. A second question that I found, a diagnostic question, again coming under the exposition of our fears, is just ignorance. Not understanding things that are right in front of you. According to this 22nd chapter of Luke, Jesus went out to the usual place in the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. This is after the supper. He's going out into the garden and right before his arrest. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray. Pray that you will not fall into temptation." And he withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, and knelt down and prayed. Now, go back. set the scene. Last Supper. One of you is going to betray me. I am going to be crucified. I'm going to be handed over. May it not be so. May it not be so. It is so. Get behind me, Satan. Don't stand in the way. This is what the Father sent me for. So they've already got the future in front of them. They know what's going to happen. And Jesus said, pray. Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and sweat was dropping like blood falling to the ground. And when he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep. Why are you sleeping? He asked them. Get up and pray. And then soon after that came that kiss that started everything. They had the Son of God right in front of them. Why are you sleeping? Something so important. I need you to pray. I need you to pray you don't fall into temptation. There's some serious things about to happen. And yet they fell asleep. They just didn't get it. It was plain as day. We can look back on it, but you know what? I probably would have been one of those that fell asleep. I can't cast stones. I don't know what I'd have done. But they did not fully comprehend, for whatever reason, what was about to take place. We let ignorance override a lot of things, including common sense, because we just don't know. You know, you can tell someone that a pan is hot, but if they touch it anyways, out of ignorance, they're going to get burnt. There's nothing you can do to stop the effect of what's about to happen. Even if you don't tell them, they walk up and go grab, I told you about... The last couple Sundays ago, I went and grabbed the percolator off of the stove, and I wasn't thinking, and it's a metal percolator. And 2 minutes ago, it had been boiling on the stove, and I grabbed it, and nice two little marks going down my arm right there. That was ignorance. I still felt the effects of my ignorance. I should have checked to see if that percolator was hot. I should have known the smell of coffee was all through the air, but I didn't. And so I suffered the effects. If you want to be perfect, says Jesus to the rich man, go sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. I think there's ignorance displayed here. Jesus knew what was in the man's heart. Riches in and of themselves are not evil. But this man clearly wanted them more than he wanted Jesus. I have a quote from Mother Teresa talking about things that happen, because we claim luck on so many things. Boy, you're really lucky that car didn't hit you. Boy, you're really lucky that you found that person. There's no such thing as chance or accident. The words merely signify our ignorance of a real and immediate cause. Why do you think you found the person that you love so much? And helps you get through all those rough points that happen throughout everyone's life. Everything happens for a purpose. There's no such thing as chance or accident. I think if we begin to realize what's right in front of us, then sometimes these questions would not startle us so. Why are you sleeping? So why are you not coming to church? Why are you not praying as much as you should be praying? These are the ones that jab me right here. Now me, I have to come to church. Otherwise, you'd know I'm not here. But let me tell you, there are some Sundays, especially when it's drizzling or cold outside, and you have to sit back and realize that I'm not coming here because I'm your pastor. I mean, I am, but That shouldn't be the main reason. I'm coming here because I want to worship the Lord. I recognize who He is and what He's done. We had a nice devotion downstairs, and we kind of skipped ahead in the Stations of the Cross. This had to do with the crucifixion tonight. And I was reminding everyone, which I'll remind you, we got a Monday, Thursday. There's no Wednesday service next week. We have a Monday, Thursday service at 7:30, and then a Good Friday service at 7:30. And that Good Friday service, it's emotional. It's memorable. It's similar every year, but every single year, I can't hold back that tear. And if it gets to the point where I can make it through a Good Friday service and not shed a tear, if it gets to that point that I'm just going through the motions, it's probably time to hang it up and turn it over to someone else. It's that big of a day for us. And that recognition needs to be there. He died. He gave His life. Why are you sleeping? The last question which gets me is comes from, it actually really stems from something that was said in seminary. I had a seminary professor that I think, I'm not sure he meant everything he said to a T. I think he used hyperbole to really stress points. And he kind of went over the top. But I remember him saying, we all want to be God, and that's the problem. I was like, well, I don't want to be God. And then as the years went on, I had him for many classes, he would say that. And I think by my graduation, maybe even Julie and I talked about this one night. I said, you know, it really is what it all kind of comes down to. We all want to call the shots. We all want to do things our way. The Frank Sinatra way. I'll do it my way. The fear of the question that came refers to the fear of not being in charge. That stuff which is against you. It's not going your way. And so the question that arises brings to light that the only reason you're really doing these things is because you want to be right and you want me to be wrong. From John's 18th chapter, the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Jesus replied, I have spoken openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues or at the temple where all the Jews have come together, and I have said nothing in secret. Why are you questioning me? Ask those who have heard me. They know what I have said. When Jesus said this, one of the officials struck him in the face. Is this the way you answer the high priest? He demanded. Jesus replied, if I've said something wrong, testify to what I've said wrong. But if I've spoken the truth, why do you strike me? From garden to grave, I really think that's metal on metal right there. That's really piercing me right now. From garden to grave, I really think we want to be in charge of everything. Hold on. Wait for it. It's going to be done in a second.
D minor 7.
Is that a D minor 7th? Is it a siren or is it a train stopping? There you go. It's a train stopping. All right. Back to where I was. Wow. From garden to grave, I think we're very selfish. I think we want to be in charge. We don't want to help others. I mean, inherently, as we walk along that path with Jesus, that changes. But fundamentally, from garden to grave, we don't want to share with others. We don't want people telling us what to do. I don't think it's a generational thing either. As I go back and study previous periods of time, it seems like the same thing keeps coming up. I even ran into an interesting story here that actually had more to do about gardening, but it fits, so I'll share it with you. This comes from a man named Ralph Woods. An ambitious farmer, unhappy about the yield of his crops, heard of a highly recommended new seed of corn. He bought some, and it produced a crop so abundant that his astonished neighbors asked him, "Could you please tell us, what is this seed?" But the farmer, afraid that he would lose the profits and his competitive advantage, kept it a secret. The second year, his seed did not produce as well as it had the previous year, and the third year, the yield was even worse. What he found out was that the farmer's prize corn was being pollinated by the inferior corn that was grown surrounding his property. In other words, if he would have just shared, he would have continued to have bumper crops of corn. But he wanted to keep it a secret. "I found the magic bean. I don't want to give it away to anyone." I think there's a little bit of that in each and every one of us. We find something magical, something that really fills our insides, and we don't want to share, yet we're called to as Christians. Go out, spread the word. Tell everyone about Jesus. Let them know how good you feel. And you know what? If you think about it, in some ways, this analogy is perfect. Because if you're completely surrounded by people that don't believe in Christ, it's going to be easier for them to lure you away, to tempt you, than it is for you to continue to keep that wonderful, beautiful seed growing. We need to share it. That's how Christianity has spread all these years. We need to share it. We can't be selfish. When Peter had that epiphany, "You are the Christ." "Yes, Peter, you finally get it. And now I must go off and die. Never, 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 never. I will not let it happen." And Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan. Don't be so selfish. I've come for you. Now let me continue on my way." "If I've spoken the truth, why do you strike me?" For me, this just screams out. Every time I'm feeling, I don't know, I've got some problems, I open up the Holy Scriptures, and it's amazing. You open the Holy Scriptures, I just need to read the Word, and you open it up, and I don't know about you, but for me, boom, it's right there on the paper. You're having a really bad day, you're anxious, things aren't going well, I need to just read the Scriptures, you open it up, "Do not be anxious." How did you do that? It must be luck. No, everything has a purpose. Jesus is in control. It all comes down to fear. Let go of your fears. Let go of the things that you have stored up inside, whether they're sins you've had in the past, something you've done, something you haven't done that you think you should have. Let go of that. Let go of that and walk through this Lenten season to the cross. We're headed there next week. And come in and just let these questions permeate your soul. Because it's really going to come down to one main question. Who is the Christ? And when that question arises, you can say, "I know him personally." Amen.